from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network all over the Great Lakes State. Our podcast, wildmichiganradio.com. That's our website. Also, you can find a link to all things that are going on in the Great Lakes State. Very happy to be back again for another week. Welcome to August. Had a little busy time last week, so we are bringing you the new show this week. And lots of things going on. I'm going to talk to our good friend Brian Pigman Quaka from Pigman, the TV series on Sportsman Channel. Also, Mark Hansen from Mark's Black Pot. Going to talk a little bit about doing some Dutch oven cooking with coals. Not really in the oven, but Dutch oven cooking, camping style. And we'll talk with John at Bubba Blade about some of their new products that they have out. So all that coming your way. If you may or may not have noticed on our Facebook page, we have a teal season for the first time in nearly 50 years coming to Michigan. This will give duck hunters the opportunity to target teal only from September 1st through September 7th. And speaking with me right now, we have Holly Vaughn from the Michigan DNR. Holly, how are you?
Doing very well. Good to be here.
Good. I'm excited about this because I would say probably in the past 8 years of doing this show, I've taken up waterfowling, and I hate my friend Bill Hawk for introducing me to it because now it's one more thing I have to spend money on. But from the perspective of the Michigan economy, that's not bad.
Not bad at all. We appreciate it, actually.
No, I'm all about the Michigan outdoors and getting people involved. And I don't think enough duck hunters know about this early teal season. And nearly 50 years, traditionally, Holly, we wait until October to start our duck season here in Michigan. By that time, we've seen one, maybe two cold fronts come, which have set these into the migration periods that teal and wood ducks and other waterfowl tend to go through. How did we get so lucky this year?
Well, historically, Michigan has been considered a production state, and it's still considered a production state for teal in that, you know, blue-winged teal and green-winged teal really do a lot of their breeding here in Michigan. But this year, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service looked at the numbers of blue-winged teal. We've had excellent habitat conditions for the last several years, and they've determined that blue-winged and green-winged teal can sustain an additional 2 to 9 times the harvest that we're currently doing right now. So we were given the opportunity to try an early teal season for 3 years. Now, it will be experimental, and we'll want to make sure that hunters are targeting only teal for this 1 week in September, September 1st through 7th, and that they're not taking non-target species like wood ducks and mallards that would commonly be around in September as well.
Now, that's pretty interesting. I mean, we've seen this year, I mean, we're getting this from U.S. Fish and Wildlife, huge numbers for ducks throughout the nation, which is great. And having this opportunity to hunt teal in Michigan and being able to take six, I looked at that number, I was quite shocked.
Yes. It is definitely a healthy bag limit, but, you know, populations are doing really well. We've had great wetlands, you know, water levels are up throughout the state due to the great snowfall and rainfall that we've had in the last few years. So that's really helped with waterfowl production in a lot of our wetlands and marshes around the state and around the Midwest.
Speaking with Holly Vaughn from the Michigan DNR regarding the first early teal season that Michigan will be experiencing in nearly 50 years, September 1st through 7th, and in conversation with Bill, which next week we'll follow up with him on this, but we talked about how Michigan duck hunting is a lot like Michigan deer hunting, where this is a pretty high-pressure state. There are a lot of waterfowlers throughout the state, and, you know, again, this is duck hunting is pretty difficult in general, but to have that many people out, do you think this is really going to bring a lot more people to the water?
We hope so. We hope it will. It's something that we're trying to encourage in this state because we're really seeing a decline in the culture of waterfowl hunting in Michigan and really throughout the Midwest. It's a skill that is not really being taught to younger generations. So it's our hope, you know, that people will get out and do this teal hunting season and bring a youngster along with them to teach them the ins and outs of duck identification and how to sit quietly in the marsh and hunt these birds. So we really hope it'll encourage a new generation of hunters.
I agree completely. Holly Vaughn joining us here on Wild Michigan, brought to you in part by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral out of Osseo, Michigan, lucky-buck.com. There's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Holly, 8 years ago, I took to the field for the first time with some friends to goose hunt. And look, you're what would appear to be something of a B-52 coming in at you when you're field hunting for geese. It was challenging to you know, understate, even for somebody that's, you know, done a lot of upland game bird hunting like myself, because of positioning yourself and everything else. But identification is easy with geese, but with teal it's a little bit different because they're smaller and harder to identify.
Yes, and unfortunately in September a lot of ducks are in their eclipse plumage when they look kind of all the same, kind of brown and drab and look pretty similar. Something that you can really look for with teal, especially when they're in flight, is to look for closely packed flocks flying together really tightly. And then they also have kind of a quick, erratic flight. So those are things you can look for. And we do have tools on our DNR website. If you go to michigan.gov/waterfowl, we have some information about the experimental early teal season and then information about how to identify some of our Michigan duck species, especially green-winged and blue-winged teal.
And this is, again, for waterfowlers who know, this is such a trophy because by the time October rolls around, they're gone. I mean, they're gone unless we have a really, really warm October, which a lot of times last year especially, that didn't happen. And only watching one teal get taken out of our duck hunting last year, this is such a cool opportunity for waterfowlers.
Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, usually the blue-winged teal are all gone, and green-winged teal show up in bags only occasionally during the October season. So we're excited to have a few more blue-winged teal harvested this year and green winged as well.
So again, we're going to be September 1st through the 7th, and there's no male-female ratio that we need to follow for this, correct?
No, there's not. The only thing that differs a little bit from the early goose season, which will be going on at the same time, is that with geese, you can begin hunting a half an hour before sunrise to sunset. But with teal, the hours are sunrise to sunset.
Good
information. So make sure that you're observing those.
And you can pick up the Michigan DNR Waterfowl Guide to know your exact times, so there's no question about what you're doing. Remember, these birds are waterfowl, federally protected. And the trouble gets to be a little bit deeper than what you really want when it comes to birds of that species. I really, really appreciate the information today. Very much looking forward to the new teal season. Thanks so much to Holly Vaughn from the Michigan DNR talking about the early teal season coming to Michigan the 1st through the 7th of September. Holly, you've been a great help. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, michigan.gov/waterfowl for you to find out more. Got more coming your way here in the next segments of the Michigan Talk Network. And in the next hour, we're going to be speaking with Mark Hansen from Mark's Black Pot on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hagen. of clarebeardsley.ie, inviting you to fish County Clare, Ireland. Now back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host of the Michigan Talk Network, spanning the globe on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Of course, we're big in Ireland, if you did not know, by the voice of Owen O'Hagan there. Thank you, Owen, for that. And going to follow up on this first ever teal season, early teal season in Michigan in almost 50 years. This is a pretty big deal. My good friend, waterfowling expert, I'm going to call him because this guy can field call geese like nobody's business. The person in question earlier that I talked about turning me on to waterfowl hunting joins us right now. Bill, when I talked to you earlier in the week, you did not realize that Michigan had this early teal season. Many, of course, waterfowlers don't know, unless you like, have your finger on the pulse of what's going on with the Michigan DNR. When I told you, what was your initial response to an early teal season?
I was excited, man. It was like, finally, you know. There's been many times hunting geese in fields or even over some water and sitting here just thinking, you know, look at all these teal coming in here. You know, a lot of other states around us have teal seasons. Like, why don't we have a teal season? We don't get the opportunity with the season that rolls in, the regular duck season, you know, early to mid-October. We don't have a lot of teal opportunity. So, you know, we sit there and we go, man, it'd just be nice to be able to do that, you know, and be able to kill a bag of teal. You know, I remember going to North Dakota, and we're targeting whatever ducks, and early in the morning get a big wad of teal come in, blue wing or green wing, and shoot them up and think, you know what, this has made my hunt. This week-long hunt, just this one volley of teal just made it. I don't care if I shoot mallards now because, you know, we don't get an opportunity, you know, to do that. So it was awesome when he told me. I was like, what? So, yeah, very cool.
See,
awesome.
Now that I've let you in, you need to take me out day one.
Right.
There's
we'll
no
go.
Excuse. Putting
I think
you on
I got
spot
a little
here.
Spot we can go.
I've been there. I know where it's at. But, yeah, no, I'm excited about this because, again, it presents an opportunity for more hunting. And we you have to be very selective when it comes to these. And we talked to Holly Vaughn from the Michigan DNR about the differences in teal, because this will be the only duck species that you can hunt. You'll have an early goose season about that same time. But again, you're going to be armed very differently. Now, let's take this approach. You have the 12-gauge with the BB, you know, shot for geese. But all of a sudden, teal come, you're not going to want to use that. So how are you going to prepare for both?
You know, for me, you know, I like to run BBs and number twos for bigger birds, even mallards. But when it comes to teal being such a smaller bird, and they typically, when you're going to start gunning them, they're in the decoys. I mean, they decoy really well when they do decide to come in. So maybe go to maybe just an improved cylinder in your 20 or 12 and maybe jump your size up as far as, you know, smaller shot. Go to number fours, or my favorite for smaller birds is number six steel. I mean, you're talking a small bird that's flying at Mach 10. I mean, and you have to be on, so you have to have every edge you can. So the more shot you have, you know, the more chances of knocking some birds down. So your bigger shot, yeah, you don't have as many. You got a little more knockdown power, but you decrease your chances of hitting them, you know, by, I can't even tell you what percentage, by having bigger shots. So go to number fours, go to number sixes if you can find it. Like I said, they're moving. They're not, you know, it's on. And when that first blast comes out, they scatter. And now it's just a free-for-all. So, and it's hard to pick them out. It's hard to pick one bird out because, you know, they're acrobatic. They come in, but their speed is unreal. So, yeah, make sure you go a little bit smaller. Give a little bit more percentage of hitting them and knocking some birds down, because definitely take advantage of this season because it is awesome. I'm jacked up about it, man.
You know, the last time you and I got to hunt with our good friend Gary Nostrand, I had the opportunity to hunt with him one time, and he got a teal that day. And you know, he was so excited about that teal. I was kind of bummed out because he got it.
I know.
But then I went up to him a little bit later on with two woodies with one shot. You know, yeah. But again, exactly. The memory to have with somebody waterfowling that has since passed, to have that camaraderie waterfowling offers you, that you can be in a tight group and have that kind of fun and with this extra opportunity. Holly says our waterfowling numbers in Michigan are on the decline, that waterfowling is losing its appeal to a lot of people, which is really kind of disheartening, because after I tried it for the first time with you 8 years, it'll be 8 years this year. I'm so bummed out when I don't get to hunt geese or ducks, when I don't have that opportunity. But I have tried to make that, you know, that happen every year since.
Right. Well, you know, it's a sport that you have to go after it if you want to be successful. And the cool thing is, Duran, when you and I, or even, it doesn't matter who it is, we're sitting in a blind and we're sitting in the layout blinds in a field, the camaraderie's there, you can talk, you can have fun. Now, I love the deer hunt too, but that's more of a hush-hush sport. And when you are hunting, you can razz each other, you can have fun, and use it as a learning tool. You know, I do most of the calling, so that's a good time to teach people how to call and why do we set decoys up like this and why do we do that and why do we do this. So, you know, waterfowling, it's very frustrating. It really is. It's almost like your goal every year is to kill a 200-inch whitetail. There's a lot of frustration. You have to do your homework. There's so much involved with it, you know, not only buying decoys, getting property, you know, and just doing your homework and just doing it the right way. You know, you go into a field or go into a water hole, don't overshoot it. Have quality hunts. You know, I would rather, out of five hunts, I'd rather have two phenomenal hunts than five, okay, we didn't kill much, blah, blah, blah. Don't burn it up. You know, and these teal are so delicate. You get a little spot, just shoot what you can and then get out and let the rest come in and rest. Then you got tomorrow to do it again. So, yeah, man, I'm excited about this. This is cool, man. It's sweet.
And what's funny is I can hear it in your voice, even somebody that's done a lot of waterfowling like you have. Bill Hawk, my good friend, joining us here on Wild Michigan. Bill is our resident waterfowl expert, the gentleman that sincerely has turned me on to waterfowl hunting. We'll have the article up on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, if you want to find out more about the upcoming teal season. And Bill, will you join me next week here on the show? Because I want to talk a little bit more about the early goose season, about how we can set up for this, and of course, why calling isn't really necessary in the early portion of the year.
Absolutely. I will. I love it.
We definitely will have you back on next week. Again, this is pretty impromptu since we were supposed to have a guest on about this time and didn't get him. But you know what? This is why we have such a bag of good, solid guests on our show. So we can, you know, grab somebody in a second. So, you know, David A. Rose, Brian Brosdahl, all prime examples. So, again, Willie, I appreciate you joining me, man.
You bet. Anytime.
All right. We're going to talk more with Bill Hawk next week here on Wild Michigan. In the meantime, make sure you hit up our website, wildmichiganradio.com. We'll have the article about the teal that are coming forth, the opportunity to hunt them early in Michigan, September 1st through the 7th. And if you want to get more from the Michigan DNR website, do so. www.michigan.gov/waterfowl. And we will have a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And as always, if you miss any of this, you can pick us up on our podcast at wildmichiganradio.com. Going to talk a little cooking with Mark Hansen from Mark's Black Pot next. A little Dutch oven cooking coming up next on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hey, this is Mark Zona from Zona's Awesome Fishing Show, and you're listening to my guy, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
I'm on a first-name basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. All over the Great Lakes State and all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. Lots of things going on, of course, and we say that all the time, because Michigan's one of those places that Michiganders, we don't go on vacation a lot to other states. We go up north, we go west, we go east. Sometimes we head south to southern Michigan, depending on what we're doing, but we stay within the state. So the pure Michigan ads, I think, are wasted on us. They're cool, don't get me wrong. And they're finally catching on about hunting and fishing. I'm liking you a little bit more, Pure Michigan. Okay? Just I've always liked it a little bit, but I'm liking it a lot more. But we are getting towards fall. I know, I said the F word on the radio. I said fall. But a lot of us excited because now we have a new teal season to look at, September 1st through the 7th. We have early goose season coming up. We have middle of September for small game. We have the first bow season, October 1st. So I'm essentially coming out of hibernation and really have a lot of things to talk about. Fall turkey season, fall fishing. So a lot of F words being bandied about on this show this morning. And when I think F word, I think David A. Rose. How you doing, buddy?
You know, that might be the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
See, that's a segue that not every outdoors radio person could pull off.
No, and I'm all for it. I love it. The F word, I'm it.
The F word, I can say it. You know what? The FCC can't do a damn thing about it.
That's right. Fishing. There, I said it.
There, another F word. My gosh. So let's talk a little about a bit about fishing as I stutter my way through this conversation with you, because I am excited. I am excited to look at the fall steelhead run. And let's start there. What is going to be the trigger for the fall steelhead run back to the rivers?
Well, really, what happens, we're talking a little later fall for the most spectacular steelhead fishing.
Sure.
But right off the bat, as soon as the end of August rolls around, we start seeing some salmon entering the rivers on a more regular basis, which, by the way, folks, there's actually quite a run of summer salmon that run up a lot of the rivers, the Big Manistee and all that kind of stuff. And with those fish come some small, what they call skipper steelhead. Those are the small, maybe 2, maybe 3-year-old fish. And I don't know what triggers it with them, but you'll see those little steelhead intermixed with the salmon. And as those salmon start to spawn, of course, those fish just start eating on the wayward eggs. So that's really, we'll use the S word, salmon. Salmon is what triggers the other S word, steelhead. You know, the waters start to cool, and especially once the salmon run really starts, September and throughout October, man, that's when you see those adult steelhead coming into the rivers and feeding on salmon eggs and all sorts of stuff like that. And it really is one of the most spectacular times to catch steelhead because there's so many and they're there to do one thing, eat.
Okay, now with that being said, David A. Rose, our guest here on Wild Michigan, salmon eggs, wayward salmon eggs. Let's talk about the tactic, because when I think wayward salmon egg, I think individuals floating through, not a sack of eggs floating through. But it could be both, so that's why the tactic to use either like a single yarn egg or a spawn sack can go either way, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, what's unique, too, and even a big glob of skein being when the eggs of a salmon or steelhead or whatever fish are tight in that sac, that's known as skein, okay? So even big globs of skein. You don't see big globs of skein floating down the river. You don't see spawn bags floating down the river. But what we're dealing with, we are dealing with fish that have brains a size smaller than your pinky fingernail. There's no calculus, there's no geometry, there's no changing the world going on in there. All they know is it emulates an egg of some kind, it smells right, it tastes right, it looks right, whatever the deal is, and they strike out at it. So, with that being said, sure, single salmon eggs, maybe under a float. You know, a lot of float fishing has become real popular, and that's where you're using a bobber and letting it drift naturally with the river. So maybe something like that, or a small spawn sack, like you said, or even a big glob of skein. So, yeah, D, all the above. How's that?
That's fine. That's a fair answer. Now, when you say float, a bobber, some guys like the word float, but it's not the spring bobber thing we're using. We're using a bit more delicate type of float, correct?
Well, you know, you can use stuff like the Carlisle float, which is a Michigan-based product that's been around forever, which is, you know, a balsa float. Now it has a plastic stem, and there is a spring on there in which you can, you know, hook it. You pull the spring back and hook your line to the slot. Steelhead anglers know that spring might have not the best metal in the world, might have a fray, so what they do is they take the spring off and actually use a piece of rubber tubing, like surgical tubing, on there to protect the line. So you can use that kind of a basic float. Probably not the big red and white round bobber like you see.
The beach ball.
The beach ball, that's right. That's probably not the best. But, yeah, they've got all these really unique floats out there now. Very stealthy. They're made of clear plastic with just a little bit of color for the angler to see it, that kind of thing, because our waters are clear. And so the fish aren't, well, we'll say spooked by this thing floating over their head. But, yeah, so floats, I mean, there's so many. I call them floats because it, I don't know, it just sounds hoity-toity. You know, bobbers, indicators, whatever you want to call it.
Strike indicator.
Yeah, well, that's what they use in fly fishing, is strike indicators. Right,
well, it's fly fishing, we're talking a little bit more elite. Not doubting you fly anglers. I want to say that now. I am not doubting the fly anglers.
In fact, fly fishing for fall run steelhead is an exceptional sport, and use your strike indicators, then use floats when you're using spawn sacks. How's that?
That's completely fair. David A. Rose is our guest here, angler, outdoor writer. Wildfishing.com is how you can find David. He is on our list of experts on our Meet the Experts page on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. The wheels are turning a little bit. I'm thinking ahead to salmon, to steelhead. What salmon are hitting the rivers in this first part of late August?
What are they hitting?
Yes. I mean, what type of salmon and aside from the obvious that we just talked about, what type of salmon are coming in?
First of all, you're going to probably see Chinook salmon. Okay, they tend to run a little earlier than the coho salmon. Chinook salmon are approximately 4 years old when they run the rivers to spawn. Cohos are approximately 3 years. So that's some of the reason of the size difference. Great things to use. Body baits, like Bomber Long A's or Reef Runner Ripsticks. Big body baits, like you would think a pike or a walleye or something would hit. You know, these guys and gals, when they're out there trolling at the river mouths, they use J-plugs and stuff, which is a plug that wobbles to and fro, emulates, you know, smelt or herring or whatever it is the salmon are feeding on, alewives. Well, as soon as they go in the river, that instinct to strike is still there. So we cast a lot of those body baits, use superline, like a 30-pound test superline. Now, it's very thin in diameter compared to monofilament. So it's easy to cast, and the reason we use such heavy line is not just the horse and this fish, but if we're fishing smaller rivers, let's say the Betsy or the Boardman, or even in some spots in the Manistee or Little Manistee or something like that, Well, I'll tell you what, you got a lot of log jams and stuff to try and work fish away from in that, so that's why the little bit of heavier line. And then, of course, you got inline spinners,
like
big Meps or Blue Fox or whatever. And then spoons, like the little Clio and all sorts of stuff like that.
All right. David A. Rose is our guest. We're going to talk another segment with him about some fall fishing. I know I said the F word again. Oh, FCC, please don't find me. Whatever. It's Wild Michigan. We live on the edge, darn it. Right, David?
Gosh, golly, gee, Wilkers, we do.
We're going to speak more with Dave and talk about fall fishing here in a little bit. Very happy to have him on here. If you miss any of this, check us out online. WildMichiganRadio.com is where you can find us. You can click the link to David A. Rose on our Meet the Experts section. And don't forget the God's Country Gobblers having their banquet Tuesday the 12th at Eagle Eye in Lansing. That information on our events page at WildMichiganRadio.com.
Hi, this is Cuz Strickland with Mossy Oak, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
It sits above the mantle on a couple rusty nails, and it's worth a bunch of money, but it damn sure ain't for sale.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Speaking of Granddaddy's Gun, a story that I covered on another show earlier this week came out about breaking the law. Before we get back to David A. Rose, I want to talk about this story because I'm rather upset about this story. MLive reporting some counties failed to report crimes by concealed gun holders. MLive analysis finds. Well, what I read through the article, and MLive going on about crimes committed and unreported by county clerks, especially in two counties of Livingston and Kalamazoo, the 11th and 9th most populated counties in the state, these crimes not being reported. I want to know, before you create a sensational headline about CPL holders committing crimes, how about you explain what the crimes were, and how about you maybe at least report if a firearm was used in the crimes? Because there are crimes that can be committed. I mean, as simple as a DUI, which is serious enough. Okay, I understand that. But please answer the question if a firearm was used in that crime. Otherwise, you got nothing. Okay? Unhappy about that irresponsible reporting. Okay? Sure, concealed pistols licenses are on the rise. Well, gee, so is crime. So why do we want to not protect ourselves? Just a thought. So if you're going to report on something, how about you go a little bit more in depth instead of creating just a sensational headline? Just a thought. Now, let's get back to my good... Sorry to take all the air out of that one. David A. Rose joining me, who carries a fishing pole, which could also be used as a weapon, David.
Yes, it could. I could poke your eye out with the end
you
of it.
Could.
That's could.
That's an assault. It's an assault St. Croix.
Exactly. And yeah, thanks for the depressing me a little bit with all that. So
it's not depressing. I just want a little truth in your stories.
Yeah, no, I agree. And as an outdoor writer, I totally understand, you know, your whole point. Yeah.
Yeah, a little anger on my point, but I think it's fair. I think it's fair. But let's go back to the fun part. Let's start talking about the F word and the S word, like fall and salmon. And there's really no bad W word that the FCC would get on me about. But let's talk about the salmon some more as we're getting, you know, we talked about the coho coming in. Boy, I tell you what, I love fighting in the river too, David, is kings. Love fighting a king salmon in the river.
Oh yeah, when they're fresh from the Great Lakes, when they've literally, I mean, we see it overnight. You know, I live here in the Traverse City area. I'm surrounded by rivers that dump into Lake Michigan, and literally, you can go down one evening. You might see a fish here or there or something like that. Literally, the wind changes just right, or the low pressure, or the rain, or whatever, something that trips their trigger, and the next morning, you walk down that same stretch of river, and there's hundreds of salmon before you, and those are feisty fish. Those are the ones that are going to hit lures the most readily, spawn, whatever it is. And oh yeah, I mean, you're just plan on losing some stuff, not to logs, not to snags, but just to fish that beat you up.
In Portland, I caught, you know, we've caught kings in Portland, and I watched this young fella. He fought this fish for a half hour, 40 minutes at least. And when he had this like big plastic storage container for his cooler, and the thing was all bowed inside, the king was huge, and it was so cool. We were catching coho, which was a blast, don't get me wrong, but to watch this young guy fight this king in the Grand River in Portland, it was so amazing. The strength, even by the time they come up that far through the Grand River from the Great Lakes, the strength that they still have after the miles of an arduous journey that they've already taken.
Yeah, I mean, they put on the feed bag right before they run up the rivers, and they have all sorts of energy, you know. And even though they're not feeding on the LYs and stuff, you know, immensely like they were just a week before, they still have a lot of energy. And, I mean, their goal is to run up. I mean, they come from the Pacific. I've been to Alaska. I've seen the rivers that they have to swim up there. I mean, Michigan has some great rivers, don't get me wrong. But I can understand where their genetics come from, you know, to run these rivers. I mean, here in Michigan, I mean, they can run 200 miles in a night. I mean, swim 200 miles up a river. I mean, it's nothing. And up, you know, especially up there, they had the huge waterfalls and just, you know, these obstacles that were just amazing. And these salmon would get past it. So that's where these genetics come from. Is all that just that fight to spawn? All your energy goes into reproducing the next year.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. 200 miles in a night.
couple hundred miles in a night.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
We can't
That's
even
amazing.
We can't even canoe that downriver, or, you know, going with the current and traversing the obstacles as a human being.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those fish are built to do just that. They live out in the, either the Great Lakes or the oceans or whatever, you know, eat, and then, yeah, they it's just the amazing the amount of power they have.
Having said that, that they've traveled so long and they get skittish, you know, that lighter line is, you know, a smaller diameter line and clarity, everything, all of these things taken into consideration, what is the right direction to go line-wise? Because, look, they're tough fish, but they're spooky fish at the same time.
Yeah, well, you know what I was saying, when they first come in the river, let's say they're in the lower section of a river, and they're literally the night before they were out in Lake Michigan in 100 foot of water, and now they're in 7 foot of water, and, you know, they're upset, and they still have all that vinegar left in them. Well, you heard me mention about, like, 30-pound test super line, like a fire line or Power Pro or mm-hmm. something like that. Just to be able to horse them a little bit. But yet, that 30-pound test, Superline, has a diameter less than, 12-pound test monofilament. So, yeah, what it is, it's not necessarily that those fish, I believe, see the line and say, oh, look, there's line.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you the lighter line, smaller diameter, you have better action to your lure, you have better action to any bait you're drifting and stuff like that. So, yeah, you still need some gumption, we'll call it, when you're fishing these fish with lures or spawn or something like that. But you can't go down, you can't drop it down a 2-pound test line. You'll just never land a fish.
No, and that's true. Look, at first, I've seen it firsthand. I've had line at 10-pound. Of course, there might have been an abrasion there that I didn't know about. You want to think that it wasn't me, it was a line. But, it happens. And expect to lose stuff, like you said.
Yeah, especially in a river. Now, if you were to go to, let's say, one of the piers that jetty off into the Great Lakes and you're casting spoons, well, yeah, maybe 10-pound or 12-pound test will be fine because you don't have all those obstacles that these fish are going to run into, you know, like a log jam or something like that, or just run downstream on you and strip all your line, where at least in the Great Lakes, when you're on those piers, you can use that little bit of lighter line and still have a good chance of landing fish.
Now, we got a few minutes left in the segment. David, what about reel selection? A lot of us use, let's keep it simple, spinning reels. How much line capacity are we going to want? Because these things have a tendency to run, and they run hard.
Oh, yeah. You're going to want something, whatever pound test you're using. Let's say you're using that 2-pound test, or excuse me, 6-pound or 10-pound or something like that. Doesn't matter. You need something that's at least going to hold about 250 yards of whatever pound test line you're going to have as your main line. Then that's because of those runs. And you're going to want a reel that has a really good drag, a really smooth drag. Now, a lot of bass guys, walleye guys, they crank the drag right down and then use anti-reverse. They'll turn that off and just actually backspool when they're fighting a fish, if, you know, the fish tugs. Salmon and steelhead, boy, you can't do that because they run so hard, so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You need a drag with or a reel with a good drag.
Well, important stuff to know, and as we get ready to polish off, you know, our steelhead gear and our fall gear, for those of us that have it, some of us use the same stuff year-round, I've done it. But it'll be, I think it's going to be a good year for fall. And a friend of mine, Andy Provenzano, who is a meteorologist for the local NBC affiliate here in Lansing, did a couple segments with us about 3 weeks ago. And he said, expect another difficult winter, but shorter this time. So maybe we'll see the run start a little earlier.
You might. Like I said, as you and I talk on this phone right now, there have already been people catching salmon out of some of the rivers all throughout Michigan. And so they start early, they'll start in August, and then, we might see a spectacular fall. Just no matter whether it's spectacular or not, you just need to get out there and enjoy it.
Exactly. Get out of the Michigan woods and water. Go hunting and fishing. Take the kids with you, please. Educate them. Future of outdoor sports, these children are. And David A. Rose, thank you so much for joining us again here, wildfishing.com. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Hey, you too, and enjoy it.
I will. You can check out David on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, in the Meet the Experts section. Thanks to the folks at Bubba Blade. Thanks to our friends for talking about the early teal season. And please join us on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, and on Facebook, of course, on the Michigan Talk Network.